Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
We've got Robert Crane.
In 3, 2, 1.
He's a Microsoft MVP, a Microsoft
certified trainer,
an Office 365
specialist, blogger, podcaster, social media enthusiast, and one-of-a-kind speaker who has a gift for explaining tech to the average person so they can understand it.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
There's also myself, Mark Keane. All right, let's move on. I'm the voiceover guy, producer of this podcast, blogger, speaker, an Azure architect,
and Microsoft
MVP who specializes in helping people with a journey to Microsoft Azure. You are listening to the
Need to Know podcast.
It's your source for the very latest in Microsoft cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations all about Azure and Office 365.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
Well, here we are, Mark, episode 147, and yet another episode for us to talk about technology, but we've also been doing something special, haven't we?
We have. We've been around the community this time round over the weekend. So we're recording this on Monday, the 3rd of April. It's Monday the 3rd of April, and we've been around the community at a MVP community event that was on Friday night and on Saturday. And that was a pretty magical event. All the MVPs and Microsoft regional directors were together in one spot in Sydney. They flew from interstate, and with the help of Microsoft, they put the event on, and we had discussions about everything. What did you think of the event, Rob?
Look, I think it was really good. It's good to get all these people in a room and obviously look at networking them together, catch up with a lot of people, a lot of faces you haven't seen before, a lot of new MVPs there as well. And again, to get some feedback and some interaction with the team from Microsoft. So it's a great opportunity for the MVPs to get together and discuss relevant community ideas. So one of the big focuses was on how to improve community, how to make it better, how to get that information out for people. So it's always worth sharing that, but it's also great to get together with the other MVPs, catch up and have a chat to them.
Yeah, and also too, while we were there, we had Rode, our I guess you can call sponsors on our podcast, were very, very kind of them to send us a Rode Link kit. And so just quickly, so you know what it is, it's called the New Shooter Kit. It's got a receiver and a transmitter. It comes with a mic, you plug it into the transmitter, and it allows you to do good quality recordings of people using Rode's kit and Rode's mic remotely from pretty much anywhere. So it's perfect for events and things like that. And so we had that kit sent to us beforehand. We took some photos, we did some presentations. We'll dive a bit more deeper into the presentation we did a bit later in this podcast. But a big thanks to Rode for sending us that kit.
I think also, too, don't forget the fact that we're using Rode mics at the moment. We've also got the little lapel mic that I ran around and used as well that we'll hear from in this episode and the next one coming along. So, again, some great kit there and really made the difference. And I was, for one, was very impressed with its noise cancellation. So when we did some of the recordings, it certainly got rid of a lot of that background noise and allowed us to hear the speakers much, much better than what I thought would. So excellent equipment, and recommended to everybody who's doing anything when it comes to audio.
Yeah, a few little rookie mistakes I made to begin with, but that's only just rookie. That's on my side, only because they sent it to me same day on literally the day before the event. So I didn't have much time to you know, prepare for the or practice and use it and test it out. But I managed to do a lot of testing myself and get there in the end. And so, yeah, I basically, like, had a few little errors on my behalf, but we worked it out. And you know what? It's actually the quality was very, very surprising.
Well, it's good. Like, I think we've managed to capture a couple of really good interviews with people. So why don't we kick off with the first one? Let us know who this is, because you did all the hard work for this one.
Yeah, so as we said, we went around the event as we had the opportunity, because we had this kit from Rode. And so we spoke to people ad hoc. We just grabbed them in the hallway, you know, in the morning tea breaks and lunchtime breaks and things like that. In between the sessions, and we caught up with some of the Microsoft regional directors. So we're going to be talking to Troy Hunt on this episode. His little chat that we did over the weekend goes for 14 minutes 22. Also, Adam Kogan, he's another Microsoft regional director. his one goes for roughly 12 minutes, and we're going to round it off with Greg Lowe, who is another Microsoft Regional Director for Australia. And Rob, you spoke to him. So you ready to kick off? Let's kick off with Troy Hunt.
Let's do it.
We are here with the famous Troy Hunt, MVP and Microsoft Regional Director. We're at the MVP Community Connection event. How are you going, Troy?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks. That's a nice intro.
That's okay. You can pay me later for that.
Yeah, good one.
So, what have you been up to lately?
So, in general, I've actually been home for the last month, which is nice. So, I do quite a bit of travel. I spent a third of 2016 away, which was about as much as what I'd really like to. So far this year, I've only been away for a month, which is good. And I've got another couple of months at home before I go to Europe for a big 6-week stint over the summer. And my family will come for a little bit of time as well, so it's not going to be too bad.
What's happening in Europe?
So in Europe, I'm doing 10 workshops, so I've got a lot of events to do. I'm over there for a conference as well, for the NDC conference in Oslo, which is really good every year.
Are you doing the keynote for that again?
No, so they rotate keynote speakers. So I did that one last year. They'll have someone different there this year. And I will do, in fact, I'm going to do a personal branding talk, which is kind of what I did today. In fact, there, it's not even going to be so much personal branding as sort of developing your identity online, of which branding's a part of it. And then I'll do my usual security thing. Because my family's there, I got my 7-year-old there, he's going to do a hacking demo as well, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Are you going to use that colourful slide that you showed us here at the event, the last slide that you had some colourful words in there?
Yeah, I was going to say, when you say colourful, for listeners who can't quite picture what we might be talking about, there wasn't much colour per se. There were some words that I have never seen used in a public conference before. But yes, I am going to use that slide in this talk because it was a great example of the sort of abuse that you can get online as well.
So this whole social abuse that seems to be coming your way, and look, I think it's I'm against it completely. I think it's horrible what they're doing. But is that must be taking some sort of toll, or just like rise above that and just move on?
It's a bit of both. And look, I mean, first of all, in total fairness, probably 99.9% of the interactions I have online are really positive. They're either positive or neutral, right? And it's very rare to have something which falls into that category of abuse. And for those who, yeah, we're not going to, I want to keep your podcast G-rated, so we maybe won't repeat it.
We can beep it out if you like.
But imagine the most aggressive language you can possibly think of appearing in comments on your blog, and it's that sort of thing. And, you know, that gets very, very inflammatory. And I guess in answer to your question now, there's a lot of it I sort of filter out. There's a lot of it I just I mute the person and I move on. This was abuse I copped a few years ago, and I think I've probably maybe had a bit more practice, unfortunately, now at dealing with it. And I tend to sort of tune out earlier.
Look, I think it's unique to you. It's happening to a lot of people. There's currently a program on the ABC at the moment on iView called Cyberbullying. Samantha Armitage on Channel 7, which is a massive celebrity, she cops it a lot. Kyle Sandilands, he cops it a lot as well. And so I think the difference is because in the MVP community, you're just big in that community. And once you get to a certain point, people will complain, and it just that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I almost wonder to that point if it's sort of like that there's going to be a constant percentage of your audience that's always going to abuse you, and maybe that constant percentage is a small fraction of 1%. But when it's a small fraction of 1% for me with 55,000 followers, well, that's still going to be a few, and for someone like Kyle Sandilands, it's probably going to be a hell of a lot more. And that's just represented by reach and scope, and it's an unfortunate byproduct of getting popular.
All right, well, let's move on. Let's focus on something more positive. And so let's talk about your car. So keep it sort of more non-technical, I guess. So you're currently famous for driving a Nissan, or is it a Datsun?
Yeah, nice try. I was wondering which one you're going to talk about. Yeah, so the Nissan GTR is the one I've had for a few years now, which is my car, and I'm enormously happy with that car, yeah.
And so you recently went down to Melbourne and drove up in something else?
Yeah, so as I am continuously reminded, this is my wife's car. So we bought a C63 AMG S, which is a twin-turbo V8. It's a station wagon or an estate, depending on what part of the world you're in. So it is a responsible family car. It just also has 700 newton meters, which is nice.
Okay, and this, are you going to keep the Nissan? What is, did you have two cars before or just one car before?
Yeah, so we had two cars before, and look, I mean, we tend to keep our cars for a long time. So this is actually, the C63 is replacing a Volkswagen estate that we've had for 8 years. So that has been a good family car. And this, for all intents and purposes, is the same sort of size and functionality. It's just a different league in terms of the performance. But I'll keep the GTR. That has four seats, which is really handy. So I take the kids to school in it all the time. I can fit both children in there quite comfortably for their size. They're only 4 and 7. It'd be different if they were 14 and 17. It wouldn't quite work. And then the C63 will be there as well. And that, if ever we sort of go out as a family or we actually need space, we use that.
Any plans on updating the jet ski at all?
Well, I did only update the jet ski about a year ago. The other one met with an unfortunate end, which we won't talk about here.
Right, so that's... Okay, I didn't hear that the end of that story or what you did to... I thought you got it fixed, but okay, you ended up replacing it, did you?
Well, okay, so we will talk about it here. So the first one I had, so we moved up to the Gold Coast about 18 months ago, which is, for those of you from other parts of the world, it's a very sort of sunny, beachy area. And we moved into a house on the water that has a boat shed, and it was kind of like, well, we always sort of thought a jet ski might be cool. Let's just get one and see if it really is. Really loved it. I went out, this was about January 2016, just before I was about to go overseas. I was going overseas like 2 days later for a month, and I thought I'll just have one last blast. And I was out in the waves, jumping over waves, came off a bit sideways, and a wave just picked it up, rolled it into the beach. And bottom line is it ended up getting flooded and, not good. It turned out that the repair bill was worth more than the jet ski was.
So okay.
They said, all right, well, you can we can sort of get you another one the same, or we can give you the money. And I thought, all right, well, if you give me the money, I can get a faster one. So I got a supercharged one instead. And so far, that's actually been very good.
Okay. Well, I guess it's a little bit safer than riding my motorbike, because when you fall off a jet ski, you go into the ocean. It sort of doesn't hurt as much as falling off a bike. So you still get that thrill of the speed.
I think if I fell off at the speed this one goes, it would probably really hurt. But having had bikes before as well, I feel a lot safer on the jet ski than when I do the bikes, mostly because there are no other riders around trying to kill you.
Yeah, no, agreed. All right, so your house in the Gold Coast, been there before, awesome house, but I'm not the only one. Channel 9 have been there. They did a recording. I'm trying to find that online. Has that been published yet?
No, it hasn't. So Channel 9, and of course this is the Microsoft Channel 9, not our Aussie media outlet, but they are doing a series of profiles on MVPs. So they did a bloke in Taiwan, which was the first one that went out. I believe they went to somewhere in Africa after that, which will be the next one, and then mine will be the third one. I have seen some of the footage, though. They took a drone and sort of flew it around our area, went up ridiculously high, got awesome 4K footage. I've seen that. It looks absolutely epic because they were there on a beautiful day as well. And then they've got everything from Seth, the host, falling off the paddleboard as my 7-year-old throws water bombs at him, through to falling off the back of my jet ski. And we just went out and did all the stuff we normally do and had a really good time.
Had a blast, and somebody was filming the whole thing.
That's it.
In 4K.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll look great.
So what's this event, or what's this Channel 9? As you said, they're profiling different people. Is it part of that new... Is that the new direction they're heading in? They're basically more focusing on individuals itself and doing a more focus on it for a lengthy period of time. Is that the way they're headed? Or
to be completely honest, I seem to end up doing so many interviews and events and things these days. I basically just go wherever I got to be and then do your thing, and then we'll figure the rest out later. So the easy answer is I'm not actually sure, but what you've said seems very feasible, because this is what we're seeing with the other profiles. And I think what they're trying to do is to say, look, yeah, there's all these interesting MVPs around the world that live in very diverse places that do very different things. And Channel 9 do a really good job professionally producing their videos as well. So I'm hoping that this gives everyone a good insight of what my life is like on the Gold Coast.
There's another guy just on that. There's another guy that started Channel 9. I watched a video about a few weeks ago who basically said that, and I can't remember his name, came on and said, look, I've been employed to basically focus on different people. So similar to what they did on you, and talk and dive into, like, focus a session on each person each time and ask about their sort of life story. And I know James Whittaker as well is doing a similar thing. So there's plenty of tech content out there, but they want to sort of unravel the under the covers of, like, tech people themselves and the personality, what drives people and things like that.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really neat idea, and I should actually watch the one they did in Taiwan, actually. But, you know, when you think about it, places like Taiwan, somewhere in Africa, and Gold Coast are just polar opposites apart. And I guess one of the interesting things, and we've been talking about this in the event here today as well, is that it just shows the amount of diversity we have, and there's a sort of a certain richness in having people from so many different backgrounds and walks of life. And maybe this will sort of help everyone understand a little bit more about how sort of richly diverse the MVP community is.
Or more about Troy Hunt, although we know a lot about you already from your social media. So you're obviously an MVP and you're a Microsoft Regional Director. So the Microsoft Regional Director component versus MVP, do you want to just, because there's a lot of confusion out there, it was asked a question today, who here has heard of the Regional Director title? And I would hazard a guess probably half the audience or more probably doesn't know or understand what that is. So I did want to just tell the folk, explain what the Regional Director title is versus MVP.
Yeah, there's a few sort of key differences. So one of them is that the numbers. So we've got about 4,000 MVPs, I think I saw on the slide today, and around about 120 regional directors. So obviously quite different there. MVPs tend to be specialists in particular domains. So I got my MVP award originally for developer security, because this is what I did. RDs tend to be much broader reaching and much more strategically focused. So we had an MVP or an RD meeting rather yesterday, and it was very much around sort of the strategy of the organisation and the community engagement at a non-tech specific level. So we tend to be people that have more sort of influence, say, over decision makers in organisations. I suspect in my case, I got the RD role about a year ago. I've got a lot of sort of media focus and publicly facing profile. I think that probably helped a lot. In my case, I don't have as much access to, say, CIOs as some of the other guys there do. It's just sort of a different level of focus, but much of the same stuff. We're sort of talking to many of the same people. We possibly have a little bit more reach into some of the people at the very top by virtue of the RD capacity, but very, very similar. And we're here today with, I think we've got four RDs here today, and what have we got, maybe 60, 70 MVPs, something like that.
Five RDs, isn't it? You got Adam, Oren, yourself, Greg Lowe, and Dr. Neil.
Oh, yeah, so I'm forgetting Adam because he's unusually quiet at the moment because he's got broken ribs.
so it hurts to laugh.
That's another story. No, yeah, they're quite right, it's five. But I guess the point is that we're all here engaged in the same conversation, the same topics, and it's really equally relevant to everyone. So in many ways, it's not that different.
Yeah, cool. All right, and the other thing is too is I think what Oren was saying is MVPs is based on your previous 12 months experience or efforts with Microsoft in the community, whereas Regional Director is the future 2 years, what they predict that you're basically going to be doing for Microsoft.
Well, it's interesting and it's sort of changing a little bit as well. I would argue that and I have yet to go through a renewal, I would argue that both of them in many ways depend on what your ability to influence is going to be like. I'm not sure how much more forward-facing RD is. Like I say, I haven't yet to go through that process. One thing we do know is that the RD award is for 2 years as opposed to annually for the MVP award. So I don't have to think about this for another year. Oren, who was talking today, is literally sweating at the moment because in the next couple of days I'm sure he'll get his renewal, but, you know, we all sweat it.
Well, he's just finished the book on Windows Server 2016, which is his 41st book. So somebody who's written that many books, I'm thinking like, hello, I mean, you'd have to be a regional director by default, one would assume.
Yeah, I've heard this many times for Oren lately about how many books. But I I think that all of us, even in the MVP capacity, we probably don't like to assume. And for me, as much as anybody else, you know, you get to that renewal point and you're going, well, it'd be really nice to get that email to know that it's all cool. Look, Oren has an amazing insight and he's an extremely smart bloke, and I have absolutely no doubt that he will get his renewal because he's very actively involved in representing the RD community as well.
Troy Hunt, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, mate. Always a pleasure.
Alrighty, Troy Hunt, live from the MVP Community Connection. Rob, he was talking about Oren Thomas on that one. And Oren Thomas, we spoke to afterwards, and we did do a recording with Oren Thomas as well. However, as I said before, one of the problems with getting new kit, like a day before it arrives, didn't have time to quickly test it. And I screwed up myself, so I wasn't recording it properly. However, one of the questions I asked Oren was about his books and the amount of books he's written. So the 41st book he's written is the Windows Server 2016 server book. And also too, he mentioned some new type of the new things that they're doing at the moment with this whole book thing is, you know how, Rob, when the books are written, they're out of date, and basically that's it. So what he said was what they're doing now is they write the book, they put it out, and you can actually subscribe, and there's updates that come out over the course of the subscription. So if you read the book electronically and you notice something's missing or something's changed, then you basically send the feedback back to Oren, and he basically, I think every so many months, he will do an update of that book and push that out.
Yeah, so I think that's the way it's going with technology changes quickly. You'll notice in the MSDN stuff that Microsoft doesn't put a lot of screenshots in because it changes so regularly. So obviously a big challenge writing a book, keeping it up to date and staying current with the technologies, unless that Oren seems to have it down pat. So again, the subscription makes a lot of sense for the way he's doing things.
Yeah, I forget the term that he said it's called. We'll find out and let you know. But yeah, it's just interesting how they did that. And I think it's a great thing. It's like, I did actually ask this. It's sort of the same as open source software, where people can contribute to the software and people can contribute to the book, sort of in a way, where people can push through their ideas and feedback back through to Oren, and Oren basically is a creator and he collects it all and collates it together and he pushes out the ultimate updates in the end. But it's just good to see that it's going to be always up to date. So that whole the term when you mentioned the fact that books always go out of date as soon as they're printed doesn't exist anymore.
True, thanks to the world of the online interweb, so that's great. All right, so we've spoken to Troy. Who have we got next up?
Well, in the theme of, and now that you know what Microsoft regional directors are versus MVPs, in the theme of regional directors, we're speaking to another bloke, another regional director. You ready?
Let's do it.
We're here with Adam Cogan. Hello, Adam.
How are you, Mark?
Not bad. Adam Cogan works for
SSW,
which is in Neutral Bay, and it's pretty much near the place where I am at the moment. But I brought you onto the podcast, or here now at live event at Microsoft in Sydney, and I want to ask you a question, which I'm going to ask many people. So, and I want to hear it from you. In your opinion, what do you think has been the biggest change in the past 12 months for Microsoft?
Well, that's obviously a big question. If you're talking broadly, you know, the impact that Satya has had across the company and, you know, the One Microsoft stuff. But I get into something a bit more specific. I work pretty closely with the ALM team.
Which is what?
So the TFS and visualstudio.com, and the guy that runs that, his name is Brian Harry, and he's in charge of all the developments you see in the cloud development. Developers working together, Visual Studio, TFS, that type of stuff. And I guess when I think about the massive investments they've made, they think a lot about DevOps now. And in the past, it was just they were building out the product. They were putting source control together. They were making it work with work items and then build. And, you know, when Octopus Deploy got big, they started working hard on Release Manager. But and then they talked for a while about just ALM, ALM, ALM.
Which stands for?
Application Lifecycle Management. And that is how developers work better together. A little bit like Scrum, a little bit like, you know, putting a feature on the backlog, getting it, you know, spec'd out, getting it prioritized, getting it developed, getting it tested, and getting it deployed.
Okay, so it's like coming from a, because Need to Know podcast is more of an IT pro sort of a focus, and you're more from a developer side. So Scrum is more like a process of getting it out from being thought about, developed, written, tested, and out in production, yeah?
That's right, yeah. So Microsoft were trying to remove the friction of that. And then you know, there was a lot of huge investments that they made over the last few years. And they were trying to get developers and testers to work better together. They wanted to stop the idea that you develop it, you build it and deploy it, or deploy it to test, and then you have another team out there, the testers, who bashed it up and tried to find the flaws. They wanted those developers to work from the same list, to work inside the same team, and the cycle of idea to deployment was quicker.
So how have they put that in? How have they changed, and what have they done to get that out into the market?
Are we talking about ALM now or DevOps?
Well, the ALM part and getting developers to work better.
Yeah, so I think they've pretty much nailed most of the pain points of getting a feature prioritized, and they've done a lot of, I think, you know, the two main systems out there today are Jira and VisualStudio.com or TFS.
Okay. And so this I guess brings me on to the other thing we were talking about before, is the new Visual Studio that's been released, the new version. Is that got a lot of this stuff built into it?
Yeah. If you are a startup and you want to write your first little piece of code for the cricket club on the weekend, you can just go into VisualStudio.com, log in, and you pretty much have everything that you need to write a little bit of code and check it in and deploy it.
Okay.
Even to Azure.
And so you can do it all online and you don't need to download the product?
You can do it online, but there's a web browser that you can enter, like there's an editor for code, it's called Monaco, but most people will use something a bit better. And the bit better thing that is free and nice to use is VS Code. But if you're like, you know, I run a company with, 50 developers, and those guys need something even better than that, and they use Visual Studio.
I've used VS Code before, being an IT pro, with the PowerShell plugin you can get from the marketplace, and that's fairly easy to use. A little bit daunting at first, but it's once you install it and get your hands dirty, it's sort of a transition from PowerShell IRC to Visual Studio Code. That's probably as far as I would get personally myself. But all right, so getting back to the original question.
You find Visual Studio a little bit more daunting because the amount of menus in there is enormous.
Yes, exactly. And not only that, it takes a long time to install. In fact, I have actually installed it, just the proper version recently, because I had to use it to deploy things to Azure ARM with templates and things like that.
And did that take you a while to install?
It took me about half a day.
Yeah, that's one. Well, I think you're exaggerating. I think you should be able to get it done in 2 to 3 hours, but... that's the major...
That's what I mean. Like, after breakfast, started work, 9 o'clock in the morning, and by lunchtime, it was just about finished installing.
Yeah. So, look, it's a huge pain point. People complain a lot about just the install pain of that. But, you know, it's a one-time cost.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, thank you for that.
I never answered your question about DevOps.
Well, go on, talk about DevOps.
Yeah, so I've seen that the team transition from talking about ALM all the time to DevOps.
Okay.
And DevOps is the thing that they started really getting into because they wanted, you know, it was all well and good to have a great idea, develop it up, get it tested, get it deployed. But once it was out there in the, you know, on the cloud and being used by users, how do we know what's the first bug we should fix when all these bugs are coming in? Are we just going to listen to the guy that, you know, screams the most or sends the most emails or uses uppercase in his subject, you know?
Monitoring or something?
Yeah, so basically we've often had monitoring, but we haven't had those stats come back into the developer's portal. And so now we can look at this portal, you know, Microsoft have invested a heap into Application Insights, and, you know, you've got other tools out there like New Relic, and Microsoft have invested a lot into those tools, and now, in the morning, you come in, and the client rings and says, we got a bad bug, we got to fix it. You don't go, what is it? Can we remote into your machine and have a look? You go, yes, we've already looked at that and we're already onto it. You know, it's a lot more proactive way of working.
Is it, I noticed the new version of Outlook for iOS has got something maybe similar, I don't know, but where if there's a problem with Outlook, you can go down the bottom to the help and you go contact support, write a little message to them and within the application itself, and it goes to somebody in support and they reply back. Somebody replies back within half a day. Like, it's a real-time conversation in the Outlook app, but this is more proactive, yeah, isn't it?
So what you're describing, Mark, is essentially a ticketing system. So
that, into the app.
Yes, so that's not what I'm telling you that DevOps is, because that requires a person to have the encouragement, or you know, they believe that somebody will listen to them to send that email.
Yep.
And but you still don't know if that's the highest priority person you should be speaking to. Like, they could be whinging about a button misaligned, or another person could be whinging about that they can't work. They've got a blocking issue. So the good thing about DevOps is it gives you an insight into which is the worst bug in the system, which parts of the application are performing the worst. Like, they're giving you real-time stats from what's in there onto your backlog, onto your to-do list, essentially.
So how does it, just give us a rundown on how it works. You've got an application which is developed, it's running, whereabouts exactly, and how does it tie in with the DevOps to get that reporting thing happening?
Right, so it can be running anywhere. It can be running in Azure on the cloud, or it can be running on-premise. But essentially, there's stuff in the code that will report an unhandled exception. There's stuff in the code that will report the time methods are taking. And that information, I guess we used to have systems where we would just log out exceptions if we wanted to. Like, in the old days, here's the thing. Somebody would complain. We would remote into their machine, see what they're talking about, and now they sometimes have trouble showing you. And then we'd isolate it. Now we'd go back to our code and we'd add a bit of tracing code and we'd trace it to a log file. Now we'd get them to install the new version and then we'd run it again. Then we'd grab the log file, send it to ourselves and start going through it and trying to work it out.
Be a bit of a process. So now it's all built into the code. When you release the app, yes, it's basically built in. So when you say built into the code, is this something the developers are putting in themselves, or is it code that they're copying from somewhere else to put into that code, or is it already pre-written like a template, or how does that work? Do they write it from scratch, the whole methodology, or is that part of the DevOps?
No. Basically, there's a number of components to DevOps, but essentially it puts instrumentation in your code and it logs it out to a database, and then it gives you this dashboard view. Think of it like Power BI automatically showing you all the problems, the serious bugs and the performance problems and the usage. So in the old days, like, let's just say you write bug-free code, you could have the situation where a developer says, hey, this report, do I need to fix it up or can I delete it? And then they ask around and said, I don't know anyone that uses it. I don't think we use it. And, all right, can we delete it? Sure, we delete it. That developer deletes it. And then later on, a manager comes to them and says, I run a report once a month. Why didn't someone ask me? That developer will now never delete another report again because he got in so much trouble. But he shouldn't even be asking that question.
He should be looking
to see, is this report ever used? Who's it used by? Oh, it's used by Jim in marketing. Let me go and ask Jim. Hey, Jim, do you need this report? There is another way that you could get this information. Can I kill it? Because I don't want to upgrade it.
Okay, so it's more of a, would I be right in saying, the DevOps in this respect is more of like a process thing rather than a thing that you got to put into an application. It's more of a process to follow, isn't it?
I think it's a bit of both. It's a different way of working. Like, I guess every
different mentality.
Every morning you got to be checking that, and you got to be thinking, I want to be checking my software is alive. You know, I care about any problems. I'm not going to wait for the Scrum Master to come to me and go, why aren't you working on customer satisfaction? You're always thinking. But there's also the tools, you know, and that's giving you the tools.
Yeah, it's like putting my IT pro hat back on. It's more of a monitoring, say, a network. If the network connection goes down, being proactive rather than waiting for somebody to call, you'd know up front, or like a website, for example, running sort of with a monitoring tool from outside, checking for, say, 200 requests or anything like that, just checking to make sure it's up, or even going one step further and actually logging in with a test account to making sure they can get past sort of the 200 response. But it's all of that set up part of the application. That makes sense. So is there any applications that you can think of which are basically set up that way at the moment?
Most of Microsoft stuff uses telemetry, and when they don't want to do something, like sometimes some of the decisions that Microsoft makes seem odd to us. But let me tell you, they have a mountain of data. They look at stuff, they see things. You know, the way that our world works isn't the way that everybody works. Like, we just think it works like that because that's how we use tools. But, you know, it's very different when you're looking at the telemetry. A lot of those telemetry systems are internal Microsoft tools. But they've built this tool, and I assume over time, all Microsoft products will remove their telemetry stuff and use the Microsoft telemetry, which is called Application Insights.
Yeah, and it also ties in with a bit of operations management suite as well in the cloud. All the telemetry data goes up there. Listen, we're at the event here at Microsoft, and I'm being sort of told we've got to sort of head off. Taxis are outside waiting. But Adam Kogan, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mark. Cheers.
There we go. Adam Kogan, our second of five regional directors in Australia who we got to record while at the MVP community event. And Rob, I just thought I'd give a quick plug just at the end there. We're talking about telemetry data up to OMS, Operations Management Suite. This Wednesday, flying down to Melbourne, I'm doing a presentation on OMS. It's called Operations Management Suite is Your Best Friend, happening at Experts Live on the 6th and 7th, which is Thursday and Friday. The actual event that I'm doing will be happening on Thursday. I think it's mid-morning or mid-afternoon, just after lunch. I'm not too sure exactly when. But if you are in Melbourne and you got some free time on the 6th and 7th, definitely jump online, Experts Live. It's the new System Center universe, and come and check it out. I'm doing the covering the four value props of OMS. So we've got the automation part of it. We've got protection and recovery. We've got insight and analytics, and security and audit, all part of OMS. Rob?
Cool. All right. Well, like I said, lots and lots of good info there. Again, some good insights from Adam. And I think that we probably have one more before we get into some of the stuff we did at the event. So why don't we throw into that now, Mark?
Well, just before we do, I actually had a bit of a listen to the interview we had with one of the other Microsoft regional directors, Oren Thomas, the guy that's written 41 books. Now, as I said before, getting kits sent on the day before the event doesn't leave much time to really test it out and get used to it. So the interview we did with Oren Thomas didn't actually turn out exactly 100% broadcast quality to put it on this podcast. However, I did have a listen, and I confirmed the book service that basically they have at the moment is called the Current Book Service. And so what happens is it automatically updates. So you go to the Microsoft Presses website to register your book. Every time there's an update, you'll get a new e-version of the book. Okay, that's what it's called, and that's how it works. So it's called the Current Book Service. So look out for that. It's pretty cool. But Rob, yeah, should we kick on to the next one?
Yeah, so let's have a talk to Greg Lowe, Regional Director and SQL Hero, about some of his thoughts at our recent MVP event.
And apologies too for the audio quality on this one. I did it recorded on my Surface instead of the iPhone, and the connections are slightly different. And not only that, the audio inputs are slightly different. Again, it comes back to the whole experience using the Rode kit. It's nothing to do with the Rode kit. It's fantastic. It's just me, myself, getting used to it. And so this one here goes for about 3.5 minutes. Rob talks to Greg. The quality is slightly different, but anyway, here it is right now.
Okay, so I'm here with Greg Lowe at the MVP event. I've got a question for you, Greg. What is the most exciting thing Microsoft's done in the last 12 months?
I'm going to answer two things, actually. I think the Power BI guys are just kicking goals left, right, and center. I look at how they've moved up. If you look at some people give credence to the Gartner Magic Quadrant stuff, but I mean, they've gone from the pack to the clear leader, you know, right up in the top corner of that. And there's good reason why they've done that. They just seem to continue to build things that people want. They're very, very focused on how they're building things and so on. And I'm really looking forward to how that's going. I think the other thing is that the SQL Server team released Service Pack 1. of SQL Server 2016, and normally I wouldn't be very excited about a SQL Server service pack, except they included significant licensing changes in there. And so all of a sudden, all the things that were coding features that you could use only in Enterprise Edition, now you can use right down in all the bottom editions. And that gives people the ability to just write one set of code that runs right across all the editions. And that's something that's been sorely needed for a long time.
Excellent. All right. Well, what about the next 12 months? Is there anything that you can see on the horizon from Microsoft that will excite you as well?
Look, I would expect to see continued work going from the Power BI team in particular. How they deal with integrating that with the on-premises things as well, because a lot of people still are going to have a partially on-premises or hybrid story there. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they can sort of fold those two together as well as they can. I think that's significant. The other thing I'm noticing is that the SQL Server team is quickly moving to a continuous delivery model like the Power BI team is. So if you look at Power BI, they keep upgrading the service every month, but they keep upgrading the tooling and things every single month. It just keeps rolling out new versions. Now, the idea of doing that in SQL Server has almost been a scary concept. People like solidity and things not changing over long periods of time. The tools, though, have already been decoupled, and they're now on a monthly release cycle, and the outcomes from that have been outstanding. There's a guy, Ken Heining, and the teams that are doing a management studio and so on, and every month, you know, like I post things now and I say, gee, it'd be good if I could blah, 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 and then 2 weeks later, you know, there's a release and there it is in the release, you know. That is just so responsive compared to anything we've ever seen before. And so being able to have that sort of responsiveness is a really big deal. And I think the SQL Server team is looking at saying, look, is there a way we can just go to a continuous delivery model with build after build after build, rather than having, you know, SQL Server 2012, 2014, 26, like specific versions. I think they're fast wanting to move away from that sort of structure. And I think that's going to produce challenges, but it'd be actually quite exciting going forward.
Excellent. All right. Well, how can people follow what you're doing and learn more information about what you've talked about?
Well, Twitter, I suppose, is one, just at Greg Lowe. Blog at sqlblog.com, you'll find Greg Lowe there. And, of course, SQL Down Under is where I have all the other content. And so, not just for Down Under, so in content, podcasts in particular. But we're also just started pushing out a whole lot of tools too that are free tools for DBAs and developers, just called SDU tools, and they've started shipping in the last couple of months as well. And so I'm hoping people will find those useful.
Excellent. All right, thanks very much for that, Greg.
A wealth of knowledge Greg is in the SQL arena, isn't he, Rob?
Yeah, certainly produces a huge amount of content, does his own podcast, been around for a long time. So if you're an SQL person, you haven't heard of Greg, really you should get on board and consume some of his stuff, because great volume of information there that will really make your life a lot easier.
So that leaves us with, because we should wrap things up shortly, but that leaves us with us. So the presentation we did at the MVP Community Connection event, what was that about?
Yeah, it was all about this little podcast that we run here. So let me kick things off with a bit of a background before we get into the new age world where we include Mark as part of our production team. I started the podcast probably around 2010, so it's been around for quite a while. When I started off, it was just the basics. I basically used consumer Skype, threw in a basic cheapy microphone, and just tried to record content and get it up there. So if you go right back to episode 1, 2, 3, the early ones weren't particularly great on the audio quality, so you know, I suppose a bit as an ad hoc happened occasionally, and then there were big gaps. But then when I met Mark, we then sat down and started looking at how we could improve the quality, obviously the audio quality and also the production quality. And that's where Mark stepped up, taking the ball and done a really great job, giving us a new intro, giving us the background, and also become a bit of a freak when it comes to getting the perfect audio quality podcast.
Freak. Thanks, production guy. All right, that's all right. I won't talk. yeah, but it was a good event. We got up in front of the all the MVPs and the regional directors, the five regional directors, and the 200 plus MVPs in Australia, and we covered off pretty much all the tools we use, and talked about the Adobe suite of products, which are fantastic. Couldn't do it without the Adobe suite. CC, which is Creative Cloud, Audition, Premiere, and so forth. Also, Zencastr. We talked about Zencastr, how we use that to record people locally at each end. That is a fantastic product. There is a free tier for that, and there was a lot of interest in the audience. And of course, to the Rode microphones that we use. So Rob has a Rode NT-USB. I've got one of those as well, but I've since upgraded my kit. Rode sent us the remote recording devices, which is the Rode News Shooter kit, the RodeLink technology, RX and TX. RX is a receiver and TX is transmitter, uses AA batteries. And that all came through as well. So what I might do is at some stage is when I get round to it is write a blog post, and we'll talk about on the podcast all about the Rode mics and how they connect, because it is a little bit finicky. There's a few tricks that I've learned to get it all hooked up through the phones and for it to record properly at each end. So I will put a blog post together at some stage and we'll stick it out. We'll tweet about it and we'll talk about it and stuff like that, because I think it's definitely well worth it. There is a lot of interest. Wouldn't you agree, Rob? From the audience about Rode mics?
Yeah, certainly people want to do it properly. MVPs, being perfectionists, want to also make sure they do it as best they can. So the equipment makes a big deal, and people like Greg Lowe, who also uses Rode equipment, also gave it a big endorsement as well. So that certainly piqued people's interest, got them interested in getting their own kit. Looking at that, so again, we'll see what we can put together and help those people. But if you are considering anything in audio, especially when it comes to microphones, make sure that you do take a look at the Rode kit, obviously the Adobe stuff, and if you get caught, obviously talk to Marcus, who's more than happy to help you.
Yeah, ping me on Twitter or email me or give me a call. I won't give the phone number out on the podcast, but if you ping me on Twitter and I feel it's necessary, I can give you my phone number and we can chat, or we can do a remote session, which I'm going to do with one of the people in the audience from over the weekend. One of the guys does his own similar thing, and he wanted me to show him remotely, and Windows 10's got that great Quick Assist program in there, the new Quick Assist option, where you can assist people remotely, similar to like Log Me In or Log Me In Rescue or whatever it's called. So we're going to be using that and do some remote help, because it's what we do. We help people in the community.
Cool. All right. Anything else for you, Mark?
Nope. I think that's it. We're at about 46 minutes now. We should really wrap things up.
All right. So how do people contact us, and how do people contact us here at the podcast?
Well, it's quite easy. Facebook is at N2K Podcast, and Twitter is the same, at N2K Podcast. Also email feedback@needtoknow.cloud. Or the website to go to, which has all the podcasts listed, is podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Cool. All right. What about yourself? How can people contact you directly?
Through those channels, or if they want to contact me directly, it's Twitter is probably the best way you can do it. I've set it up so you can send me a direct message without following me, although you can follow me if you like. It's at Mark Keane. So it's MarkKean, and you should really be following me. Rob?
Excellent. So that's a cool shout out to all the internet trolls out there. Make sure that you join up, Mark, just looking for the numbers to reach the 1,000 points. So if you do want to contact me directly, again, on the Twitter at DirectorCI, we'll also put you in touch with me directly. But I think we should wind it up. Thank everybody for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Also, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Also, don't be afraid to provide us with feedback directly, and also suggestions on what technologies you'd like us to cover and what people you'd like to hear from. So we've got a pretty wide variety of people we've done recently, thanks to our Ignite sessions, but also with the MVP stuff. So there are plenty of people out there that we can tap. So if you want someone specific, please don't hesitate to let us know. But with that, I think I'm done. What about yourself, Mark?
Yep, all done.
All right, so you've been listening to another episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.